Okay, so just carrying on with Christian's pet peeve about the contact us. Well, you know, there's no contact us is the most important thing you want people to do. Let's face it. You want them to get in touch with you. You want them to send you an email or to telephone you, or even to Skype you nowadays. And so they have to be able to do that easily. So having a number and an email address at the top of the page is a good idea. But the other thing that's very good is to have that contact us link, that button, that navigation button, big, bold, and right at the top of the page, above the fold, on the same spot on every page, so that it's always there. They can always see it and just click contact us, and it takes them to a page where they can easily get in touch. And give them different options. You know, in NLP, a lot of you that have done NLP training will be very aware of the idea of rep systems, where you know some people have a very visual approach to things, some people have a kinesthetic approach to things, and etc. And it's the you know, they feel their way in. But this is the same. You know, with contact us, some people want to email, some people would be much more comfortable to talk to you on the phone, and so you just give them different options. And but I think the point that Christian's making is, for goodness sake, make it easy. Make it simple and obvious for them to do that, because if that's your most wanted response is for them to contact you, and I suggest it should be, just make it easy.
And the other mistake, another pet hate of mine, is people either giving too much importance or not enough importance to the design of the website. And again, it kind of links into some of the areas we've already talked about in terms of, you know, the most wanted response is more important, making it about your client. You know, in copy we call it direct response marketing. It's getting them to pick up the phone, to send the email. But tell me a little bit from your experience on the design side of websites and the importance of that.
Yeah, it's like a shortcut. There's two ways of answering that. There's two ways of explaining it. Number one is to give you all of the design points for best practices for design, and I'll do that now. But before I do, you know, think about the idea of a shortcut. I'll give you my favorite shortcut story. When I was at school, we had a physical, what would you call it, PE, physical education, sports coach, sports teacher, and he was incredibly unfit. I don't know if this happens these days, but it's quite funny. I mean, this was kind of 25, 27, 28 years ago when I was at school. And yeah, we had this games teacher, this sports teacher, and he was overweight. He wasn't very fit. And he used to turn out wearing his, you know, his training sports outfit and a whistle and everything else, but he didn't used to actually do anything. Now, he used to send us out on a cross-country run, it was called. He'd send us out on a run. Out and we'd run outside of the school. We'd do this great big circuit around town, 2, 3 miles, and then at the end we'd come back in again, and he'd be blowing his whistle as we all got back. A bunch of us realized quite quickly, in fact, most of the class realized quite quickly, that we didn't actually have to do this 3, 4 mile cross-country run. All we had to do was to run out of the school boundary, hide behind, there was a hedge next to the school, a big bunch of trees, like a big hedge. And we always used to sit in this gully. We used to sit there, smoking cigarettes, eating potato chips, drinking cold drinks, whatever. And we just sit there chatting for half an hour. And we'd creep back round to the other school boundary, and we'd run back in again, pretending to puff and pant. We were just kids being naughty, but I mean, everyone was the same. And the fact was, rather than going on a 3, 4 mile country cross-country run, we did a, you know, a 2 minute run with a half an hour break in the middle to socialize. And it was the ultimate shortcut. And the beauty with, you know, comparing that to websites, you know, the whole metaphor really is that today you don't need to do all that design stuff, because we have something very, very, very wonderful called WordPress. And there's other options, but WordPress is by far the biggest and the easiest for most people to use. And WordPress produced something called themes. You know, people make themes for WordPress, and basically a theme is something you just plug in and play. So you plug in a WordPress theme. It might cost you $50 or $100. You can even get free ones. And hey presto, bingo, you've got a beautiful website that follows all of the best practices for design. And that's the shortcut. However, if you want to do your own design, if you fancy yourself as a graphic designer or you want to design your own website from scratch, then there are certain things that you need to get right. And, you know, we can talk about those now, Christian, if you like. We can go through them. But ultimately, I would recommend the cross-country run approach of just buy a WordPress theme and put it live.
Yeah, I think I think that's definitely the way forward. And maybe the best practices we could highlight in the resources area or give a reference to that.
Yeah, well, Christian's putting together a wonderful resources pack of, you know, all the kind of most useful places on the internet that you can go to get simple instruction for doing this, that, and the other, and I'm sure you'll include that in there.
Yeah, I think it's the best thing to do.
The other thing is myself and Christian, we're involved in a project where we're working with an organisation that are going to put together WordPress themes, but what we call CMS versions, so they're not blogs, because WordPress was originally blogging software. But the blog type website doesn't always work very well for the kind of practitioner websites that we recommend. We recommend something called CMS, which is a content management system, and it's a particular kind of WordPress theme. And again, WordPress were voted the best in the world for CMS websites, so it's still a great solution. But myself and Christian are involved in a project where we're going to produce beautiful, gorgeous, ready-to-go practitioner websites. You know, you'd still need to write your own copy and put your logo and your photos in, but the actual template will be ready to go. And, you know, it's very exciting. It's something we'll be telling you about in due course. And it's quite advanced in its planning and development. So it won't be that long. So if you're worried about website design,
just to make it as easy for you as we possibly can, it's real kind of simple plug and play stuff.
Yeah, and so for any, and particularly built with the practitioner in mind, you know, the hypnosis practitioner, the coach, the therapist, anybody that's running that kind of a business, the websites we're going to offer are going to be absolutely perfect for that. And that's coming soon. So anyone who really is scared about the idea of designing and building their own website or the expense of having someone, you know, because a lot of people pay thousands of dollars for websites. I can assure you right now, ours will not be that kind of price. These will be, you know, $50, $100 beautiful themes ready to go. You know, for those that really need help, then we might offer some, you know, we might be able to offer some other services. It won't be me and Christian. It will be website designers and developers, WordPress experts. But they will be absolutely building them for exactly what you're looking for. So keep that in mind. But, you know, whether or not you're going to design your own website or use a WordPress theme, I think it's probably important to go through some of the best practices anyway, so that you understand why those things are important. And
okay, yeah. Give us a highlight, a snapshot of those then.
Yeah, well, the first thing I would say is, just from a design perspective, is what we call white space. Okay, and this all comes from lots of very, very scientific study of people's eye movements when they're moving through the internet and reading content and looking for important points. The eyes get very tired if they can't find what they want quickly. And white space, in terms of, you know, a nice clean white or very light coloured background to a website, allows people's eyes to move cleanly and quickly through the information. So if you currently have a website with a black background, or a dark green or purple background, you might want to think twice. You may want to think about changing that background to white or very, very light colour. That would be my first point. And if you have a WordPress site, for instance, that can be done very, very quickly, very easily. And if you have control over your website, you should be able to get that change made quickly. I mean, in terms of code, in terms of actual website coding, anybody who tells you it's a big deal to change the colour of a website background, I believe is either doesn't know what they're doing or they're not being completely honest with you, because there's something called CSS. It's kind of a magical thing in web program where you can just make one very, very small change to a piece of code, takes about 2 seconds, and your whole website, every page, instantly changes, for instance, the colour. And so, you know, white space, easy to do, easy to change if you've made that mistake. But it feels professional, it feels nice and easy on the eyes, and it allows people to find what they're looking for quickly. Dark, ugly backgrounds can really distract. And people click away, you know, click, they just do. So that would be the first one. Nice, easy navigation. The navigation, which is basically the links and the buttons that people click to get from one page to the next, again, should be very, very easy. It should be like if you visit a new city and you've never been there before, and you're looking for maybe a museum, an art gallery, the beach, the restaurant area of town. These should all be nice and clearly signposted and easy to find. There's nothing worse than driving around, not having a clue where anything is. And a lot of websites are like that. And it's a design issue. It's putting the instructions and the pertinent messages and directions of how to get around your website in the right place, nice and easy to read, nice and simple to use. You know, your contact us point was a very good one.
Good. Any others?
Yeah, plenty. When you're writing your copy for your website, so forget the copy itself because that's a different subject, but the actual design, short sentences, short paragraphs, lots of breaks, not too much text on the page. I mean, if you have a page on your website that goes much over 400 or 500 words, forget the fact that you're going to bore people and nobody's got time to read that anyway. Just from a design perspective, it just looks like too much. It's overwhelming. And keep it short, keep it snappy. Short sentences, short paragraphs, lots of breaks, and everything nicely spaced out. Again, it's easy on the eyes, it's easy on the brain. You know, one of my things, I'm attention deficit. I can't focus on a set thing like reading a website. I can't sit there for hours reading it. I just lose attention. And to be honest, there's a big theory nowadays that everybody's becoming more attention deficit. Everybody's finding it hard, more and more of a struggle to concentrate on stuff because we're bombarded with so much information. So don't do that to people, and you know, consider that a design tip. Images, nice and clean and professional looking. It's a funny thing, it's like with certificates and training and qualifications. Although I say to people with their websites, don't get too hung up on the design, don't spend thousands of dollars on design and logos and all that stuff, because that's not actually what makes the difference. On the other hand, it still has to look professional. So it's a balancing act. I think that's my main design points. In the ebook, we talk about it a lot more. There's probably a lot more, but they're the biggies. They're the big ones. If you can make your site look easy to read, clean, professional, and don't forget, most of us, what we're doing is quite a therapeutic thing. You know, whatever your modality and your way of operating, what you're doing is really quite a therapeutic thing for people. And so you want to think about colours in terms of blues and, you know, lots of white space, lots of nice therapeutic blue colours. You know, I'm not an expert on colour theory, but what I can tell you is that, you know, those dark red, black, gold, yellow, those kind of colours are quite scary to people. Christian, do you know the story? I mean, do you know in terms of colour theory and design, you know, fast food restaurants,
right?
You know, your McDonald's and all of those, you know, and it's all of them actually, they have lots of red and yellow in their colours. And you walk into one of those fast food restaurants, it's not as bad as it used to be, but years ago, the tables would be red and yellow and black, and the furniture and the furnishings were designed that way. Do you know why that was?
No, I don't.
It was specifically so people didn't spend too long there.
Oh, okay.
Okay, the idea was get... And that's why when you walk in and they say, can I take your order? The instant you walk in the door, you haven't even looked at the menu and they're asking you what you want. It used to really annoy me. And then I'd sit down and think, I don't feel very comfortable here. This isn't a very relaxing place. And that was the whole idea. They want turnover. They want people in and out, in and out, in and out. And so you're not supposed to feel settled. An animal in the forest, in natural surroundings... the colours red and yellow are scary. If you're a little mouse in a forest and you see a flash of red or yellow going past, it's probably something quite dangerous and you run away. And so those colours are unsettling. And if you do that with your website, surprise, surprise, people go click, gone. They're not comfortable. That's my design class. This is from a non-designer, non-technical person, but that's my design lesson of the day. Don't just make people feel comfortable and they'll feel welcome. It's, you know, you wouldn't bring people into your clinic or your practice office and your practice rooms, your office, and sit them in a red chair with yellow wallpaper and all of that stuff, you just wouldn't do it.
I think that they're good practices, and if somebody's listening thinking that's quite basic, I'd urge you to do what Ed said earlier, and that's go back to your site and actually audit it and see how you can make yours more appealing to the eye.
Yeah, and if you don't want it to sting too much personally, because we all take these things personally, do it a different way. I mean, choose a random city anywhere in the world, go and look at the top 10, let's say, hypnotherapy results in Google for, you know, hypnotherapy in that city. Go and look at the top 10 websites, and I think with the things that you've learned on these calls so far, you'll be absolutely startled at how many mistakes people are making. You know, you'll probably find that some of those really popular, not popular, but you know, top of the Google result websites have got black backgrounds, writing that you can't read, they don't tell you what city they're in, the big, long, boring paragraphs without any breaks, and your eyes are getting tired, you can't find their contact details, etc., etc. And you'll see these mistakes everywhere. All the mistakes we've talked about, talking about yourself rather than the client, too academic, not friendly, enough communication, talking about features, not benefits. You'll see all of these catastrophic mistakes being made again and again and again, and hopefully it will make you feel good because you know how to cut through that noise and how to really, really connect with people now.
Yeah, and remember, there's no such thing as a perfect website, but take these ideas and these strategies of ways of how you can increase the value of your website and how you can make your website even more responsive than it already is.
Yeah. One of the things, Christian, that people are doing is they're trying to rush people through a process too quickly. Each process has a few steps that you have to get people through, and you need to understand it. In business, online business, it's called the buying cycle. It's, you know, you can see it in shops. You know, a person will walk into a store, let's say a clothes store, and they'll see some clothing they like, and they'll have a look at it. And then what they do is they tend to walk away again. And then they come back and they have another look. And then they might try it on. And then they go home and they come back the next day and they bring a friend with them, and they try that dress on again, and they ask their friend for their opinion. And then they put it back again, and then they go and have a coffee, and then they come back again and they buy it. And there's just these steps, and you know, people that understand that do very, very well. It's the same with your website. People are going to come, they're going to have a look, they're going to go away, they're going to come back, then they'll send you an email, then they'll go away, they'll read the email, they'll think about it over the weekend, they'll let it marinate. Monday morning, they'll phone you and ask for some information. If they like you and they like what you say, they'll book an appointment. Now, I'm not saying that's the exact cycle, but it will be something like that. And your website needs to help them with that. Do you know what I mean? It's like from someone coming in cold to making a booking to come and see you. If that happens too quickly without them having the information, the time to build rapport and empathy through your website communication, then my worry is they're not going to turn up to their appointment. It was a rash decision. So I like, with my websites, I like to make it nice and easy for people to make that decision in their own time comfortably. And I'll give them a lot of encouragement, you know, like the helpful store assistant who can't do enough to help you, but they know that it's you that will make the decision in the end. And I think people will try to rush it. I think it's much better to say to people, hey, why don't you get in touch? I've got a free brochure I can send to you. I've got some information I'd like to put in the post to you. I've got something I can email you. Give me a call and we can have a chat. I'll give you 10 minutes of my time. I'll just give you some ideas on the phone. I mean, there's so many different ways you can frame this to help the client take the next gentle step. You know, it's very frustrating, isn't it, if you want to get someone from here to there, and from their perspective, it's just too big a leap, so they don't do anything. Whereas if you can put a few extra steps in the pathway, it just becomes effortless for them to glide to that next step and the next step and the next step. And before you know it, you've got a new client. That's how I see these things. What do you think, Christian?
No, I agree with you. It's kind of, again, it's making it simple and as easy as possible. And it's like, you know, if you walked into a store and somebody jumped on you straight away, you're not going to feel comfortable and you'll be making a quick exit. And it's the same sort of principle, isn't it? You've got to kind of make it, I guess, phrase I heard once, nobody likes to be sold to, but people like to buy. So it's making the buy-in experience, it's making the whole service experience as easy for them as possible.
Yeah.
To make a more informed, educated decision.
we're back to that idea that people think business is a dirty word, and so when you say you're getting them to buy, people are thinking, oh, I don't want to sell people things. But at the end of the day, I mean, the way to frame this in terms of your practice here, because I don't, when I look through the job ads, you know, just out of interest, I go and say, oh, who's advertising what jobs, what employment positions? You don't see many jobs for hypnotherapists and life coaches and NLP practitioners, for instance. You really don't. Let's face it, most of us, we're self-employed. We work for ourselves. So whether we like it or not, we're in business. Now, personally, I love being in business. The reason I love being in business, because it gives me a chance to do some good in the world. You know, I want to leave this world a better place than when I came here. And a business is the perfect opportunity to do some good in the world, to find your place, to find your mission, to find a way of making other people's lives better. And if that's business, that's a wonderful thing. And the rewards in terms of payment and the wonderful people that you meet and the opportunities it affords you in terms of your own life, you know, taking your family on holidays or getting your kids into a good education or whatever it is that motivates you, you know, being able to work the hours you want to work, being able to do the things you want to do. If the business can do that for you, then there's nothing dirty about business. All you're doing is helping people. I think people who struggle with the concept of being in business and selling and marketing maybe need to think of it that way a little bit more. I mean, I can think of times in the past where I didn't do a very good job of selling what I do to a client. I'm talking years and years ago, where I hadn't quite worked all this stuff out. And I thought, oh, well, I feel okay because I didn't push that person. And I think it's good not to push. I think it's good not to, you know, just to leave them be. But then I realized that maybe they didn't get what they wanted. Maybe they lost their bottle and didn't bother, you know, they lost their nerve and they didn't go and see a hypnotherapist. Maybe they decided it wasn't for them, and perhaps I did them a disservice. Perhaps if I'd have maybe infused them a bit more, communicated more strongly what it is that I can do to help them, maybe they would have come to see me, maybe their life would have turned out a bit better. And I sometimes have these thoughts and I think, well, actually, maybe we're obligated to sell to people because the benefits for them, you know, the way their life can change, are just unbelievable. Maybe we should be selling more.
Yeah, and again, I think generally people in the people health profession are trying to add value to people's lives. And if you see it that way, you know, you could be the best in the world, but if people don't know you exist, what help are you to anybody? So whether you're charging or not charging, whether money is your primary motivation or not, you know, if you're looking to help as many people as possible, whatever the reward is for you, then following these strategies is going to be a huge advantage for you.
Yeah, and I mean, at the end of the day, if you don't sell what you do to people, and I'm not talking about forcing them, I'm just talking about making sure that they've got all the information they need in terms of the benefits that you can offer them and how it works and just how wonderful it's going to be. Because if you don't sell to people, or you think of selling as communicating, educating, helping. When I sell to someone on the phone, I mean, when someone phones me and to see, you know, to ask about what I do and should they make an appointment, is it right for them, I make a point of really trying to help them on the phone. A lot of people say, don't do therapy, don't do coaching on the phone unless they're paying. Well, I agree with that to a certain extent, but I want people, when they've dealt with me, when they've met me and spoke to me for the first time, to walk away from that conversation or that meeting thinking, you know, I feel better than I did when I started that conversation. And if I've sold them something in the process, fantastic, because I can give them more and more value. And, you know, maybe what you're saying, Christian, is that if you don't sell to people, you're actually depriving them of the incredible value that they could have had.
Yeah, indeed. And another way of putting it is making it easier for people to do business with you, or making it easier for people to utilise your services that you offer.
Yeah, making it easier for people to become a client of yours. There's so many people that I work with on a daily basis, and they're so wonderful. They've got so much to offer. They really... Sometimes they're quiet people, quiet, gentle, caring people, but the impact they can have on people's lives is anything but quiet and gentle. It's profound. But people don't find out, and I get so frustrated. I think, I wish... I'm thinking about this one particular woman, and she's so quiet, and I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, you could just make such a difference to these young people's lives, but they don't know, and they're not going to know unless you find a way of connecting.
A lot of these strategies and mistakes apply both on and offline, but if we bring it back to online, but using the comparison of offline, I see so many people who, you know, they'll take an advert out, they'll get the brochures printed, and they expect the traffic to come to them, and it's the kind of the same online. They build the site, and then they just expect people to find it. Mm. So if you've got any tips and strategies on how people can, I know we've mentioned a few already, or quite a few, but have you got any others?
Human beings have an amazing capacity to dissociate, okay, when they need to. A friend of mine had a really bad automobile accident. He was actually on a motorbike, and he was knocked off his motorbike when he was young, and he had, you know, what's known as a near-death experience. I mean, he talks about this situation, and it was a profound story. And I say, well, that sounds really scary, Greg. And he'll tell me, no, it's not scary at all. It's one of the most beautiful experiences he ever had. He left his body, and he looked down on the scene, and he watched it all happen. And it was, he talks about it as a very kind of spiritual experience. But you see, when people have accidents or traumas, they tend to dissociate. But a funny thing is, a lot of people that are very, very good at what they do, they actually manage to dissociate in very positive ways as well. And I'm not saying it's not positive. Like, if you've had an accident and you're in pain and you dissociate, you kind of leave your body and stand, you know, forget about it and distance yourself, detach yourself from the pain and the trauma and the shock, that's actually a pretty good thing. You know, shock is often described as a state of dissociation. But there's other ways you can do that. You know, like let me give you an example. A great trainer, a great presenter, speech maker, somebody who's great at giving speeches and presenting, often they're very good at dissociating. They come out of their body, they go into the audience, and they imagine themselves as the audience watching, and they want to make sure that what that person's watching is inspirational and impactful and enjoyable and fun. And they can only do that. What they're doing is they're seeing everything from the eyes of their audience, their client, their students. And it's a fantastic thing. You know, I find it very inspiring. And you know, that's what I tend to do in when I'm teaching. I really imagine myself in the audience watching the training, because that tells me what I need to do next. You know, what are these people really looking for? And I tend to do that with websites as well, and all marketing materials. I tend to be quite good at going through my own websites, but not as me, as the audience. And that's how, you know, if I'm not using the words you, yours, you know, is this how you feel? Is this something you'd like help with? If I'm not using that kind of language, if you're dissociated, you pick that up very quickly, because it's like, this website isn't talking to me. You know, it's talking to somebody else. This isn't me. This isn't for me. And dissociation, being able to see the world through somebody else's eyes, is a very, very powerful gift. And if you're not very good at that yet, if you haven't practiced and perfected your ability to dissociate in terms of looking at your marketing and your communications, get somebody else to do it for you. You know, I've done this, Christian, haven't I? Where I've written an advertisement or a blog post or something like that, and I've come to you and I've said, Christian, would you have a look at this for me and pretend you're the client reading it? What would you think of this? You know, you can get help with it. I would never put out an advertisement or a website page or a blog post or anything like that if I hadn't looked at it through my client's eyes first, because it's for them, it's not for me, it's for them. And if I can't be objective, if I can't see the wood for the trees, as they say, then I'll ask somebody I trust to have a look for me.
Yeah, it's kind of sometimes, it's almost the curse of knowledge that you forget how much you know. Or you're assuming that the potential client or the person reading knows as much as you do. And it's not a conscious thing.
No.
But that's what's always useful, to get somebody else to look at it for you.
Exactly. And if I ask you, Christian, to look at something for me, I don't say, Christian, go and read this advertisement or go and read this blog post. I say, Christian, could you go and read this blog post and pretend you're my client? Would you be impressed? Would this help you? Would this enlighten you? So you have to pretend to be somebody else. But there's less boundaries if I ask you to do it than if I do it myself, because I'm sometimes too caught up in it. So it's objectivity. It's the art of being objective, of being able to see it from different angles, you know, from the outside.
Ed, we're covering some amazing ground here, but there's one other thought that's coming into my mind that I want us to talk about today, and that's kind of people get very excited, overwhelmed with the importance of kind of building links and networks in relation to your websites. So what are some of the mistakes you see people make, or what are some of the mistakes people can avoid in that?
In terms of networking with other people. Well, let's go back to Google, love.
To building links, and, you know, even now with social media playing such a big part and being quite sort of Google-friendly, so what's the importance of building
links? It's actually the same thing. If we go back to Google, love, and the Google mindset, links and stuff, it's all the same. What, you know, think of it this way. Think of it as a voting system. Google wants to produce the most relevant search results it can. And the way it's always done that, much more so 10 years ago, was it looked at how many other people are recommending your website or your web page. Because Google doesn't see a website. Google sees pages, and each page it indexes separately. So you could do really well on one page. I've got a colleague, and she's got this random page on her website. I think it's to do with sports. It might be golf or something like that. And she's the number one of all the search engines in, you know, locally for anything to do with golf. And it's not even an area she's particularly interested in. She just happened to put that page on there. And another website that was a big golfing website recommended it, linked to it. They mentioned it in their link page. And so she got a lot of Google love for that page. She just wants to be number one for NLP. NLP in London or something like that. She wants to be number one for NLP in London. But she's nowhere to be found for that. But she's right at the top for golf. And it drives her mad. She gets all these golf inquiries and she's not even that bothered. But she's there because she's got some Google love, because somebody else voted for her and said, that's a great page about golf. And you see, that's how it works. In the early days, Google just counted how many people linked to you. So the more people you could get their website to link to you, the better. Now, in a tactical way, that used to work. And people would say, yes, you've got to get lots and lots of Google links. What we're talking about is the principle. The deeper principle is not about the link. It's about the fact that Google is saying, you must be good because other people are saying that you're good. But this is the only way we have of measuring it. Now, today, there's other ways of measuring it, because people will like something you've said on Facebook, or people will retweet something you've said on Twitter, or people will make a positive comment on your blog post. Or people will go to Google Places and they'll say, you know, Christian's a great hypnotherapist, here's his website, I would recommend it. And so these messages are coming from all over the place. But it all boils down to the same thing. How can you get people to vote for your website, to say that your website is good? And links are still a very good way to do that. But basically anything, any buzz, any word of mouth, any comment online that points to your website and says, that's a good website, that guy's great, you know, that woman's fantastic, she'll help you, she's inspirational, she's a great healer, or she's a great performance coach, or whatever. Any of that kind of stuff is a vote for you, and ultimately will make your website more popular.
Google love it is.
Absolutely. You know what, a lot of people, actually, no, I'll come to that later. You carry on, Christian, because you've got some great ideas. I was going to ask you about something, actually. I was going to throw something at you, because something I know that you're very good at, and you advocate and you practice and you teach people, is the idea of relationship marketing and building relationships. Now, we talked about that a little bit in terms of the cycle that people go through from first hitting your website to then meeting you for the first time. And of course, it continues onwards from there, but when it comes to websites, Christian, what is relationship marketing from your perspective, and how do you think you can utilise that to make your website more successful?
Good question. Well, I think a lot of the components we've already talked about, and again, it's fundamentally about building a rapport with people. It's kind of letting people in. It's letting them find out the information without kind of pulling them in, So how you can use that on your website, again, it's making it about the client, it's making it relevant and interesting for them. And as you kind of talk about the cycle, it's letting them in and giving them a little bit more each time. So maybe you're offering them a free report or a brochure, and then they can get more from you until ultimately they decide whether they do or don't want to come and see you. And then with social media, it makes it even easier to build the relationship marketing, because as you said, people can communicate and respond with you. It's a nice way of them being able to kind of softly approach you without committing to anything. And then colleagues and local businesses may well be saying and writing nice things about you, so you never know who's watching, who's following a conversation. So relationship marketing is very powerful. I'm a huge fan of it. And with the art of social media particularly, you can really link that back in to your website, because you can have all sorts of plugins and widgets that show your social media interaction on your website. And if you've got a blog, people can comment on there as well. So that's kind of how I would say you could utilize relationship building on your website.
There's so many components now, aren't there? I mean, it's very, very common now for a prospective client that's looking for the services that you offer. It's very often that they'll find you online, but not on your actual website. They might go to Google and find an article that you've written, or a blog post, or something that somebody else has said about you on another website, and that might be where they find you first of all. But the next stage in the relationship is often that they'll go from there to your website. They'll come and search for you. So a lot of people, in the olden days, people would find you more so by searching for, you know, stop smoking services in London, whereas nowadays they might find out about you somewhere else, and they actually find you by searching Christian Baker. And yeah. So people's names are being Googled a lot more nowadays. I mean, I go through my web stats and people find me by name a lot more than they used to. And there's other reasons for that, of course, but mostly it's because they found out about me somewhere else and now they want to do their research.
Research, that's the word that springs to my mind. And now, more than ever, it's easier for them to do that.
Yeah, and it's funny because, like, there's a mindset thing here, you know, as people are probably gathering if you don't know me already. I'm big into the idea of mindset, because if you get your mindset right, you're filtering everything the right way and your results tend to follow. Now, I have clients who do, you know, well, I'll have two clients, and, you know, just to contrast it, they'll do the same job, the same profession, you know, the same job title, as it were. And let's say, for instance, it could be hypnotherapist. Let's say NLP practitioner, because a lot of NLP practitioners are very proud of the fact they can do stuff quickly, which is fine in itself. But I'll have like one client who's an NLP coach or practitioner, and they'll say, on average, I see my clients for one session. Okay. And then I'll have another one who will say, on average, I see my clients for 10 sessions over the course of 6 months or a year. And I think it's very, very interesting, because they've both got the same tools and techniques and training and stuff, but to me they've got a completely different mindset. And the way I talk about it, as I say, well, the one mindset is a one night stand mindset. It's that kind of one or two dates or three dates mindset. And there's this other mindset of, this is a long term relationship. And it's the long-term relationship mindset. And I think that's what you've got, Christian. You've always seen this as a long-term relationship that evolves. And, you know, without putting too much of a value judgment on those two things, I just think if you have a long-term process with a client, you can offer so much more value. From a business perspective, it's so much more rewarding. But everything's deeper. Everything's more meaningful. The results tend to be exponentially better. And for some issues, let's take weight loss, for instance, you have to have a long-term relationship. I don't buy into this idea that you'll have a session with a client for weight loss and one session and all the work's done. I just don't see that. You know, it's a long-term, deep, meaningful relationship. And the reason I bring that up is that I can tell often which side of that divide people are by looking at their website. I can see where their mindset is, because if someone's got the one-night-stand therapeutic mindset, one-night-stand practitioner mindset, when I read their website, I can tell. And it often makes me feel uncomfortable. It makes me feel rushed. It makes me feel panicky. Whereas someone that's got the Christian Baker mindset, you know, the long-term relationship practitioner, when I read their website marketing, I feel that this is a lot more meaningful. This is going to go somewhere. It's going to last. And it's going to really get me somewhere, not just for this one little thing that's hurting now, but all aspects of my life. And you might want to think about that in your language. You know, do you believe that when you see a client, they're going to be a client for life? They're going to be a client in the long term? And if that's the case, that will affect how you communicate. I don't have an exact point to make there. I think you need to think about what your mindset is, because however you believe you are, however you believe things are, it's going to come across, consciously or unconsciously, it's going to come across on your website.
Just to clarify for anybody who may not have totally taken that on board, that's not to be confused with the suggestion that you have to lock your clients in for a long-term relationship. We're talking about building the relationship as if it's going to be one.
Absolutely. I've got a client.
Before they come into you. So that relationship may have been ongoing through your website for a period of time before they actually became a client. So, yeah.
I'm amazed at how many people who train in counselling are very, very wonderful people and very committed to the idea of the therapeutic relationship, in quote marks, but they've got no comprehension that that relationship starts the instant somebody first hears about you or first reads your website, because the website's not written. Let me remind you, it's a conversation. Your website should talk to people, and when they email you, the therapeutic relationship is well and truly underway a long time before they ever get to meet you. A lot of the therapeutic work and the rapport building can be done long before you meet your clients these days. And just to clarify on the thing about trying to lock clients into hundreds of sessions, you know, that's not what we do. That's, you know, to be fair, that's often what psychotherapists in the traditional model do. You know, you'll lock someone into the idea of a two-year relationship right from the beginning. And again, I'm not saying that's right, wrong or anything. It's just that's the model. A lot of people that are on our call, Christian, are people that are used to seeing people a few times. And I think that people, you know, if you see your client on average 1, 2, 3 sessions, I think, you know, there's a paradigm shift, there's a breakthrough that's coming your way, and you need to see it, because it's not about you, it's about your client. And, you know, we like to have these long-term relationships. I often, I'll go back and get my car serviced at the same garage I did for years ago, just because that's the relationship that I already have. Now, what we do might not be the same, but think about it this way. I've got a client that I saw actually in a different city in Christchurch, probably, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. And I think I only saw them for 2 or 3 sessions, but they've kept in touch. You know, I've had the occasional email, and I often email them just to say, how's it going? Is everything okay? Let me know if I can ever help again. And they've been fine. I mean, they've had such a profound kind of process breakthrough that they managed to get themselves back on track. But I can tell you for a fact that I've had at least 5 or 6 clients since, right up to today, that have been referred by that person. And I'm convinced that the reason I get so many referrals, and so do you, Christian, and a lot of the successful practitioners that I know, they're very much referral-based. The reason they get those referrals is because of their mindset and the way they treated those clients years ago. I might not see a client for 2 years. That doesn't mean they're not necessarily a client. I can still keep the relationship going. It's profound, and for a lot of people, it's a very, very challenging idea. But think about it, because if you buy into that idea and you start to develop that way of looking at your clients, you know, a fair and rewarding and deep relationship ongoing, it may change the way you get referrals and all kinds of things, and it may change the way you communicate on your website, and you might start to become more successful. That's the way I see it.
Yeah, good point.
I hope it's not too esoteric or abstract. I don't mean it to be. I just sometimes feel that we owe people the opportunity to think about things differently. It's what we do.
Ed, I think we're we're coming to an end of covering these points really, really well. Obviously, people have got the ebook they can go over and digest and kind of re-listen to these calls and be asking themselves, you know, how can I apply this to my website? How can I apply this to what I'm doing and my marketing efforts? But is there anything further that's in your mind that you'd like to share with people at this stage?
There's lots of stuff. I mean, let me just, because I know some people say, you know, tell us what to do, tell us the exact steps. I'll do my best, and maybe you can join in, Christian, where you see some value to be added. But let's give people kind of a checklist, and maybe you can, you know, go over some of this when you put your resources pack together. There's two parts. If anybody's ever studied Perry Marshall, Perry Marshall talks about the two parts of an airplane. Have you heard this story, Christian?
It rings a bell, but I'm listening.
He talks about the Wright brothers. He talks about how in the early days of aviation, so many people failed because they got one part wrong and not the other. So they either built a fantastic engine, but the plane was aerodynamically the wrong shape and it just crashed. But some people, they built aerodynamically a beautiful plane, but they couldn't get the engine right. And the way Perry Marshall talks about this, if anybody doesn't know, he's like the acknowledged Google AdWords expert of the world and a very, very nice fellow besides. But he talks about what the Wright brothers did was they developed this plane almost like a glider. I think Perry might have been some kind of an engineer originally, so I know his mind thinks this way. But he talks about how they built this beautiful plane and it was like a glider. It was aerodynamically perfect. You know, it almost flew anyway. And then once they tested it and they got their plane perfect, they then added the right engine and the plane then flew perfectly. And the reason he talks about this story is because people want to go onto Google AdWords or they want to find all these different ways to bring traffic into their website, but the website isn't right. I mean, if you do all the things that me and Christian have talked about already in terms of your design and your website copy and the way you communicate, the way you lay out your website, then it's like you've created the glider. Now it's going to be much, much easier to stick an engine on. Now it's going to be much easier to actually send traffic into your website, knowing that it's going to turn into clients. Another way to look at it is what I call leaky bucket syndrome. Most websites, because of the design, because of the bad communication, because of the bad layout, because they don't tell people where they are, they don't give their contact numbers, they don't tell you the benefits, they sell features, not benefits. What you end up with is what would be compared to a leaky bucket. Now, sending people to that website is a waste of time because it's like putting water into a leaky bucket. So I think what we've done here, Christian, is we've done a pretty good job of teaching people how to make that bucket watertight. And yeah, in future modules and future things that we're going to put out there, we'll probably talk a lot more about how to get more traffic. But I would say it's not that difficult.
Get the fundamentals in place first.
It's imperative to get that bucket watertight first. And so some things I would recommend are, and also it's easy to get links. It's easy to get people mentioning you and linking to you when your website's ready. And it's probably only going to take you a few days, a couple of weeks to really nail most of this stuff. So, you know, make sure that you see your website from the visitor's eyes, from their viewpoint. Make sure you're reading it from their perspective. Make sure you understand the experience, the visceral experience, the emotional experience from their perspective. You know, feel that experience the way they're going to feel it. And really go through that stuff and imagine you're the client. Imagine you're the visitor. How would you feel? How would you react to that statement? How would you react to that image, to the argument that's being put forwards? If you feel that you can't be objective, get somebody to do it for you. Okay, now get your headlines, the big headline at the top of each page, get them powerful, get them so they're compelling, so that they get people to read the next line. Because the challenge is to keep people on your website for at least 3 or 4 seconds. If you can do that, you're off to the races. Okay, you're probably doing all the right things. Make sure people can contact you easily. Make sure you're not trying to push them too far, that you just get them to take that next step. Make sure that you categorize well. You know, if you have 10 different specializations, 10 different issues that you like to help people with, have a page for each. And spend a lot of time on each page, making it clear that you really understand that issue, that you're an expert. you have experience, and that you really can talk and describe the situation from the visitor's perspective, from the reader's perspective, so that they feel that they're understood. Keep your website clean, nice white space, small paragraphs, small sentences, choppy, like a conversation, not like an essay or an academic piece, but a conversation in which the person reading will feel very, very involved. Get links, get people to link to you, get as many other websites as you can to mention you on their website and to link to you. In the ebook, we talk a lot about anchor text, meta tags, headings, some of the more technical stuff. So, you know, go through the ebook and read through it a few times so that you really understand best practices for setting up the, you know, the technical side of things. I'm running out of ideas here, Christian.
I think we've shared plenty of ideas, so I think it is we're coming to a timely point to wrap this up.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big believer that when people work with clients, often they make it too internal. They worry too much about how they're going to come across and whether they can make things work and all that stuff. And people spend a lot of time worrying or undervaluing themselves. The easiest way to work with a client is to be more external, to see the world more from their perspective, to imagine what it's like to be them. You know, that expression about walking around in somebody else's shoes for a mile or for an hour. I don't know how the expression goes, but apparently, you know, in the olden days, old leather shoes, if you put on a new pair of moccasins, it was about moccasins, that was it. If you put on a new pair of moccasins and you walked around in the rain, the moccasins used to actually shrink to fit the shape and size of your foot. And so if somebody else put your moccasins on, they would feel really strange because they would be the shape of your foot. So the saying, walk around in somebody else's shoes, it means, you know, see the world, experience the world from their perspective. And that's a great way to work with someone, to help them improve their life, to help them make breakthroughs. Now, when it comes to, and hopefully, Christian, you and I have done a good job of that with these calls and with the way that we teach. Sometimes it's confusing for people, but it's hopefully very, very helpful, I would hope. But the other side is when you are building a website and marketing, I think sometimes people go too far in that direction of externalizing. And what I mean by that is they start using external processes in a different way. They start looking for other people to give them the answers. They want other people to do everything for them. They want other people to build their website. They want other people to do the design, the logos. And that's fine as it goes in terms of expertise, but it can also be very, very expensive. You can end up spending thousands of dollars for something that you really didn't need to. If you'd have gone more internal, if you'd have asked yourself what you need to do next, you may have got better answers. I think people have got a lot more answers inside of them than they think. And I'm sorry if I've confused you there, but think this stuff through. I mean, people have got a lot of answers inside themselves. I don't think there's any harm in going to a web developer and saying, I want this, this, this. I want it to do this. I want the photo there. I want this headline. I want this logo. I want white space. I want very professional navigation. I'm telling them exactly what you want. I'm not technical, so I can't do it, so I'd like you to do it for me. Rather than just helplessly saying, I want a website. I want to be top of the search engines. Because you can get yourself into a lot of trouble by not taking the internal responsibility. Because a lot of people out there that will charge you a lot of money to build websites, to do your marketing, to write your copy, a lot of them, I'm afraid, aren't actually that good at what they do, and it's because they don't know what needs to be done. The great thing with me and Christian is we've had to do this stuff to buy our food, to feed our families. You know, I've been in the situation in the past for many years where if my website didn't bring in some clients or sell some CDs or something like that, I'm talking a long time ago now, but you know, it really was like that. If I didn't get clients, I didn't earn any money. If I didn't earn any money, I couldn't pay the mortgage. I couldn't buy food for my family. And the reassuring thing, and I know Christian's been through that as well, so the reassuring thing is that we've been there and we've had to do the walking. And so, you know, we don't We're not talking from ivory towers. We know exactly what it's like. Number one, we know what it's like having to bring clients in order to earn money to live. But we also understand the absolute unbelievable value that you guys offer to people. And so we're frustrated. We want you to get more clients. We want your websites buzzing, because we know that people out there who are depressed or stressed or anxious or unhappy with their lives, we know that their other option is drinking, eating unhealthy foods, taking drugs, all kinds of stuff. So we want you helping them. And so we're coming at this from a perspective of how can we help these people get more clients so they can enrich their lives and make their lives better. A lot of people that you would pay to do stuff for you for your website maybe are not quite coming from that perspective. Or, and if they are benevolent, they may not have the life experience, they may not have the specialist expertise that me and Christian have of having been through what some of you guys are going through in building your practice. So we really do care, and we've really got some great ideas to share with you, and I think we've probably done a really good job of that. So Christian, why don't you summarise?
Yeah, I was just going to say we've covered a heck of a lot of ground during these calls and some, revealed some pretty significant mistakes that we've made and a lot of other people have made. So I urge you to go over the calls, reread the book, make the notes, and as I always say, just think, you know, how can I apply this? How can I utilize this? And, you know, do it one step at a time. You know, it doesn't have to be all done straight away. So just, you know, knock them off, tick them off, and help yourself evolve your website into a more effective, responsive mechanism than what it currently is. And as Ed has rightly said, web is one of the largest, most responsive mechanisms that we've had and still have in our own businesses. We know it can work for you. Just mm-hmm. apply some of these principles, measure and test the response for yourself, and we'll be here to help you on the way to ensure that you get all the clients you want, deserve and need.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for summarizing, Christian. That's great. And just a parting thought, really, you know, you guys out there, what you're doing is amazing. It's unbelievable in the you know, the profound and incredible potential that you have to help other people. What you do is literally amazing. Don't ever underestimate that. But even more importantly, don't underestimate how amazing your clients are. Don't underestimate how incredible and talented and full of potential and possibilities and fun and happiness and love and all those other wonderful things. Don't forget how much of that your clients have. Your clients are amazing people. Don't be scared to tell them that. If you're happy to tell your clients how much you think of them and how much potential you see in them and just how you can help them, you're going to become a pretty incredible marketing talent, and your website will shine through. It will shine above all the others. And that's all I've got to say. I look forward to chatting to some of you soon.
Yeah, thanks for sharing, Ed. It's been really good.
No, Christian, an absolute pleasure as always.
Take care, everyone.